Dr. Dan Murphy, welcome to the World Chiropractic Summit. Great to have you here.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to getting into a great conversation. We've had many people that have mentioned your name as part of the reason why they're able to have impact. So it's going to be an exciting interview this morning. So, Dan, when you're explaining chiropractic to a layperson, how do you go about that, sharing the message?
You know, this would be a typical example. Just recent this year, 2015, I'm in an airplane, and I'm reading something technical. And the guy next to me goes, "Are you a physician?" And I go, "No, I'm a chiropractor." And he lights up like a candle. He goes, "Whoa, chiropractic is so awesome. I just love chiropractic. You guys are the best. I'm just so glad I've never had to use one of you guys yet." And I'm going, "Holy smokes." So the guy has a totally positive attitude about chiropractic. Mm. He says he's glad he's never had to use one. I go, "Well, why have you not been to a chiropractor?" He goes, "Well, because I'm feeling pretty good." So his model in chiropractic is someone you go to if you have a complaint, a back pain, a neck pain, something like that. And I very quickly tell this guy, I go, "Whether you have pain or not has nothing to do with chiropractic. Chiropractic has to do with mechanical function as we live, exist, and function in a gravity environment. And if you are not functioning well in gravity, it influences many different parts of your health and physiology. It influences your brain, the way you think, the way you hear, the way you see. And even more importantly, one of my favorite things, it influences your systemic health and wellness. There are relays from your mechanical function that control your immune system, as an example. And if you're not functioning well mechanically, your immune system doesn't work as well as it could otherwise function. I further kind of got off in that chiropractic is about this thing called innate intelligence. And innate intelligence, if you look at the 33 principles of chiropractic, subluxation is only mentioned one time, principle number 31. Mentioned more than any other concept is the concept of innate and innate intelligence. It's there 12 of the 33 times. And this means that there is an innate lifestyle. More than just looking at people's mechanical function as they live, exist, and function in gravity, we also look at other aspects of innate health and physiology that we incorporate into the chiropractic message. Just as a real simple, kind of non-relevant metaphor, drinking a diet soda. Drinking a diet soda is against innate intelligence. You have three molecules. You have phenylalanine, you have aspartic acid, and you have methanol that hooks them together. Well, methanol is a non-hormetic toxin. It is always bad for you. It is never good for you. It has no business ever going into your mouth. And yet people would put this into their mouth, and this is against innate intelligence because it has health consequences. For example, I just looked at an article that came out of the top nutrition journal in the world, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. They're following people that drink diet sodas for literally 22 years, and they're finding certain cancers, particularly lymphomas and leukemias. Some of those cancers go up literally 300% on people that drink these things on a daily basis. This is against innate intelligence. And part of the reason is methanol being a non-hormetic toxin, when people put it into their mouth, it's against innate intelligence. Therefore, chiropractors tend to preach against it. When you look at these non-hormetic chemicals, they are metabolized. Methanol is metabolized into formaldehyde. It's one enzyme away, one enzyme. We have an enzyme that converts methanol into formaldehyde, which is an egregious, proven, non-controversial carcinogen. We should stay away from that kind of stuff. So chiropractors always have that message as, don't wait until you're screwed up. Let's try to prevent health problems. Let's look at you holistically. Let's look at you from the perspective of innate intelligence. And my funnest things that I've been doing recently, if you've read that book, it's called Younger Next Year by Crawley and Lodge. It's a great book. Second edition is coming out, I hear, next month, January. If you look at that book, they have a section on proprioception. So I just did class at the University of California, Berkeley. These are smart kids, 4.0 kids that get in there. And I give them a class on chiropractic. They're lay people. They're smart kids. Half of their parents are allopathic providers. So I say to these young students, I say, "You guys are the best. How many senses are there?" And they quickly point out there are five senses. Then what I do is I take my finger, I stick it behind my back, and I go, "Okay, can I see it? No. Can I hear it? No. Can I smell it? No. Can I taste it? No. Can I feel it? No, because it's in the middle of the air." And yet my brain knows where it is. That's the sixth sense. That's proprioception. That's what chiropractic centers are about. Whether or not you have good mechanical function is something that a chiropractor would have to assess. You can't figure it out on your own for the most part. You can't figure it out on your own, but a good chiropractor can. And if you read Crawley and Lodge, they say that that input, that sixth sense, that proprioception builds the brain. If you take that, and it talks about how every part of your body, the brain has to know where it is at all times, that's proprioceptive mechanical function. And if you lose that mechanics, you lose that proprioceptor that goes up into the brain. Take that and dovetail it into Norman Doidge's book, our top guy on synaptogenesis neuroplasticity. If you've read his 2015 book, it's called The Brain's Way of Healing. This is top allopathic provider. He's got a section in there on, of all things, proprioception. And he talks about how when you lose proprioception, the brain loses the ability to see. It loses the ability to hear, and the brain starts to atrophy. So incredible. You get an allopathic provider that doesn't understand anything about chiropractic, but he mentions that when you have lack of mechanically driven proprioceptive input into the brain doesn't hear as well. This is the classic D.D. Palmer, Harvey Lillard, concept in chiropractic from over a century ago, and we see it in a 2015 copyrighted book. He also mentions the hearing component, and then all of these others. If you integrate that with other studies about how these mechanoreceptors, this proprioceptive input, goes to the cerebellum, and how the cerebellum now has monosynaptic leads to the hypothalamus, and that's really what controls whole body health and homeostasis. It's the leads to the hypothalamus that we can very easily get there from screwed up joints right to the cerebellum, right to the hypothalamus, and influence whole body homeostasis, the balance between the sympathetics and the parasympathetic nervous system. I mean, just would I explain it to like this to a layperson? Absolutely. Are they kind of like freaked out? Totally freaked out. But I remember years ago, in fact, I remember the year 1992, I attended my first Carrick seminar, and I'm listening to Carrick, and I have four associates and me in the office, and all of the clinic doctors have a Monday meeting. We talk about what we did on the weekend. So everybody's saying what they did. I say, well, I took the best seminar I ever took. They go, really, what'd you take? They go, I took a Carrick seminar. They go, really, what did he say? And I go, I can't even think of one thing that he said. I mean, it was so over my head what he was saying, but yet I went out of there thinking, this is the best seminar I've ever done. When I do patient education class, Tuesday nights at 7:30, when I do that class, people come in on Wednesday afternoon. They go, great class last night. I go, thank you. They go, I had no idea what you were talking about. I go, really? No idea. They go, yeah, no idea. But will you check out the kids tomorrow? I go, sure. And I started to realize people don't really need to get it. Totally. They just have to know that you get it, that you're trustable, that you're the go-to guy, that you're smart, you're educated, you know what you're talking about, and that's all they really need to know. And a lot of times, I'm just so enthusiastic about it. I was telling you guys that a year ago, January, I did the Parker, and I listened to the old-timers. They brought up all the old-timers. So these guys, some of them could barely get up on the stage. There's guys that have been chiropractors for over half a century. And I listened to all the old timers, including one of the guys that was instrumental in getting me into chiropractic, Charlie Ward. And these guys get up there, and I try to think, what's the message they're saying? And they say the most important of all of the message is your level of enthusiasm. That success is really linked to your level of enthusiasm more than anything else. And that's kind of me. I'm kind of like super enthusiastic, but I'm really well-grounded in science, and I can talk just about on any topic. Before I'm doing this with you guys, I did a one-hour phone thing where chiropractors just called me with every sort of crazy clinical problem you could ever imagine. And I'm so well background. Plus, I'm old. I've been a chiropractor now for 30 years. I have enough of a background that I can talk about just about any clinical problem that they might be facing in a way that might give them some really excellent clinical hints. And again, I'm just so enthusiastic about everything. And I think that's, I think that that's how I have the biggest impact, is that I'm enthusiastic. I think I was born to be a chiropractor. I don't think it was an accident I'm a chiropractor. I was born to be a chiropractor. I don't think I could ever be anything else. It's the absolute best career for me. I could not be anything else other than a chiropractor. So it's really in my heart. It's really into my soul. I'm really enthusiastic about it. But I have that never give up attitude, in that I think every day that there's more to learn, more to do. I can be a better chiropractor every day, every minute of every day. And so the result is, I think that every year I have a lot more clinical skills. I know more. And I think it just kind of comes across and pretty much everything I do in all my classes and with the patients and everything else. How's that for a start?
I've got goosebumps on my arms here, Dan, and I'm ready to go and rock some Parsiforms. My Parsiforms on fire and rock some atlases at the moment. So, fantastic answer, and I'm sure lots of people are going to rewind that answer and play that over and over again. I certainly am. You mentioned a few books there, The Brainwave Healing and the 33 Principles, a couple of contemporary books. Are there a couple of books that have shaped you, in the past to allow you to do what you do now?
Well, probably. I mean, I am well-educated, and I like neurology. I'm not the best in neurology, but I like neurology. And I think that some of my favorite things, if you read Symptoms of Visceral Disease by Pottinger, that's an amazing book. I mean, no chiropractors that I know have ever read that. I think the last publication was 1953. Mm-hmm. And if you read that book by Pottinger, you start thinking, heck, this guy knew more about chiropractic than we know about. And then once you start talking like this, a bunch of old-timers will say, when I was an old-timer in school, we learned about Speransky, Symptoms of Visceral Disease by the Scientific Basis of Medicine by Speransky. It's a Russian book. It was translated into English into the 40s. I mean, during World War II. But if you read this stuff, it is absolute the best chiropractic neurology. Then, of course, we have, I don't think that anyone can really understand chiropractic unless they read Kaur, Irvin Kaur. You should read everything that Kaur wrote because Kaur is the man. A Princeton-educated physiologist, if you read Kaur, you start thinking, oh my gosh, this guy knew more about what we are doing today than chiropractors have ever known. And he died, maybe a decade ago. He was in his 90s when he died. But he was the top physiologist on why if you do not have sound mechanical function in gravity, regardless of your symptoms, symptoms are not it. It's just a crazy accident. Chiropractic happens to be really good at treating pain, because we are. And the reason is when you improve mechanical function, you create a neurological sequence of events that closes the pain gate. People feel better. And so chiropractic has kind of been centering on that. But if you look at the history of chiropractic, for the first 50 years of chiropractic didn't do any ache and pain stuff. In fact, there's entire years at Palmer Davenport where not a single person went in with a complaint of neck pain or back pain. So what were they treating back in the first 50 years? They're treating visceral problems. In fact, if you really look at it, chiropractic exists in your country as well as mine as a consequence of the 1918 flu pandemic. If you look at the 1918 flu thing, I collect studies on the flu. Just got another great one out of the Wall Street Journal. I'm telling you, chiropractic is because we helped people survive, live when they had life-threatening infectious diseases. And to understand that, the person I think that understands it best is Kaur. You have to read everything that Kaur has written, particularly the link between the mechanoreceptors and the sympathetic nervous system. And then you dovetail that right out of Kaur into Ellenkopf. Read the Ellenkopf article coming out of the Annals of Pharmacotherapy, December of 2000. It's a 43-page article with 446 references. It's like a little book. If you read that article, it's how the entire immune system is controlled by the sympathetic nervous system. Well, it's very easy to connect chiropractic mechanical function to the sympathetics and then sympathetics to immunology. And then you look at the anecdotal observations of the 1918 flu, which I tend to collect. And if you continue to read contemporary osteopathic literature, where they look at those same relationships between mechanical function, sympathetic tone, and immunology, I think that when you talk about books, you have to read everything that Kaur did. And these are some of my favorite kind of chironeurology type of references. My favorite reference for innate intelligence and innate health is the book by a retired neurosurgeon from Jackson, Mississippi, Russell Blaylock. If you read Blaylock's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, the current copyright is a 2006. It is over the top, absolute best book. It's a life-changing book. He has the unique ability to write a book with wasting no words at all. So if you highlight the important things, you throw the highlighter away in two pages because the entire page is yellow, every page. He's got the absolute best book. He's a very clear thinker. I think it's the best innate, non-chiropractic innate book that I've read in terms of health issues. So I like Blaylock. I have scored a dinner with him, so I do have a bias towards a guy. I've scored a dinner with him and got to kind of learn whatever I could from him in a couple hours. My second is the book Primal Body, Primal Mind by Nora Gadgadis out of Portland, Oregon. Gadgadis is similar to Blalock in that it's a wonderful book on innate intelligence. If you read it from that eye, which is, as a chiropractor, I read every book with an eye to innate intelligence. Her book, Primal Body, Primal Mind, it came out in 2011, is an absolute killer book on innate health issues outside of traditional chiropractic joint mechanical function. I have scored a lunch with her in February coming up. I haven't met her yet, but we've hooked it up that I will have lunch with her in February, get a chance to meet the lady, talk and see what she knows, see what she knows. And I guess she's working on another book. I like that book so much. But if you look at my office, if you look at my house where I'm right now, we live with bookshelves. There are books everywhere you go in our office, in our house. I am a bookworm. So I have literally thousands of books, not an exaggeration, that I'm fairly conversant in. So you asked me about a few books. That's a few books that I think are really noteworthy right there. But read the Younger Next Year by Crawley and Lodge. It's really good. It's good. 2007. Good book. And Dan, can you read a section on proprioception. It's really good. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Irvin Kaur you spoke about before. Can you spell Kaur for us?
Yeah. Kaur. K-O-R-R. Kaur.
Great. And then you talked about Russell Blalock. Was it? Sorry, the name?
Blalock. B-L-A-Y-L-O-C-K. You know, I don't get to Australia very often. And I guess I get to go there this year, next year, 2016. But when I here in the U.S., I do literally a class every week. I think next year I've already, Michelle just told me I have over 60 classes scheduled for next year. And besides everything else we're doing and my part-time faculty position at Life Chiropractic College West, when I do my regular classes, we go over all of those references in the science. So people over here are pretty used to seeing it. You guys, maybe not as much just because I don't get over there, and other people like me probably don't get over there quite as much just because it's a long flight. I get to go to New Zealand, too. I think it's like a $4,000 ticket for a coach ticket. It's like really expensive. So it's hard to get over there just because of the distance and because of the, you know, the travel expenses. It's hard to add up everything, but always looking forward to going over there. Blalock is B-L-A-Y-L-O-C-K. His first name is Russell. Really great book. Really great book.
Good. So, Dan, 60 speeches already booked, and you talked about all the other things that you do. What are some of the habits that you have personally that have really allowed you to have that impact, to have that reach? You know, as Tony said beforehand, when we were talking and asked chiropractors, who are some of the people that have really had an impact on you? Your name comes up again and again and again. So let's get a bit meta and come back to you. What are the habits that you have that allow you to have this reach, this impact, to read so constantly, to maintain this enthusiasm and passion? Where does that come from?
Well, the first thing I would say is that our, meaning Michelle and I's, our level of hypocrisy is extremely low. We live it the way we preach it. You will almost never see us sin or vary from the message. Do I ever sin? Yes. But I think now Michelle and I have gone maybe 4 months without any alcohol. But I would drink alcohol. It's not like where I'm a total teetotaler. But we live it very, very careful. We eat healthy. Every meal is healthy. We have very few health sins. We exercise on an extremely regular basis. We do hardcore exercise 6 days a week. We do aerobics 4 days a week. We do weight training 2 days a week. And we do hardcore aerobics. We are interval trainers. We do hardcore weights. I mean, we're pushing very heavy weights. And we eat healthy literally every meal. We do not do refined carbohydrates. Almost 100% of our carbs come from the consumption of vegetables, which we do essentially every meal of the day. We eat primarily innate paleo. If you've not yet read the new book 2015, The Paleo Cardiologist by Jack Wolfson, you should. It's a 2015. It is a killer book. And I'm telling you guys, he's got a chapter in the book titled The Wonders of Chiropractic. This is some of the best stuff ever. So so my personal habits are that we are under chiropractic care. We almost never have been to allopathic providers. It's not that we're crazy. My best friend got bit by a rattlesnake. We didn't adjust him. We took him to the ER and saved his life. I mean, we appreciate how allopathic healthcare can save lives, but we appreciate that we have pretty much sold out healthcare to patentable chemical companies, and that this is not, for the most part, in the best interest of people. We preach prevention rather than crisis treatment. Try to not get sick. Take good care of your body. And we have a class that we do on innate neurology and also one on innate exercise and also on innate nutrition. The people that have had the biggest influence on me, and again, I am lucky. And that's the truth. I'm lucky. I'm lucky because, you know, I've had the best parents. I have the best siblings. I have the best education. And I have had the best mentors that I just tripped upon. There was never a chiropractor like Dr. Richard Stonebrink from Western States. He was the best adjuster, the clearest thinker, the absolute best guy that I could have ever run into. I think even of all the chiropractors I've been over all these decades, that Stonebrink was unparalleled in his ability to understand the science and application of that science for patient healthcare. He died maybe 4 years ago, but Stonebrink was the absolute best, and anyone that has met him would agree with that. I have been very, very much influenced by Dr. Ted Carrick, the neurology guy. I learned a lot of neurology from Carrick, even though his emphasis is in a different area than mine. I think that I gained a great appreciation of the neurology of chiropractic and what we're doing when we adjust people from going to the Carrick seminars. And even more recently, I see that information being further, you know, refined by looking at the work of Heidi Horvick from New Zealand. If you listen to Heidi, if you've read her book, The Reality Check from 2013, it's a really great book on this, the neurological science of chiropractic. I think it has really meant a lot to my understanding of exactly what chiropractic does. And then in terms of clinical excellence, I think no one has influenced me probably more than deceased chiropractor Don Harrison. Harrison, who started the biophysics stuff, I thought he was a biomechanical genius. He has a PhD in mathematics. He looked at the spine from a mechanical engineering perspective and understanding that when you have mechanical problems, that it influences so many different aspects of physiology, not just in terms of acceleration of degenerative joint and disc disease, but then you take that and you dovetail into what it does to you neurologically and how you can improve that if you understand the concepts of spinal rehabilitation. I think that Harrison had a huge influence on me. And then there's always people, when I was in school, I needed help learning to be a superior adjuster. I mean, I always liked to adjust. I was always into it. But there are guys that literally took me under their wing and helped me one-on-one to learn to be a good adjuster. Chiropractors like Vern Weber from Tacoma, Washington. Chiropractors like Dan Beeson from Portland, Oregon. And chiropractor Steve DeShaw, whose son is one of the greatest chiropractic attorneys in existence now. Steve DeShaw, all of these guys took me under their wings. They took a special interest in me and helping me to become a superior chiropractor. And all those guys are themselves still in full-time clinical practice, and they literally helped me 40 years ago. Mm. And yet they're still in full-time clinical practice. They're getting to be old guys. I guess getting to be old too. But you think about what were you doing 40 years ago? I mean, you guys, 40 years ago, you weren't even born practically. Oh, and these guys were teaching me how to be a chiropractor 40 years ago.
Yeah. We were just in nappies, Dan, just in nappies.
Yes.
Dan, getting back to some of the lifestyle questions you talk about, many of the things that you have mentioned, chiropractors know on some level that they should be doing, but they're not. What allows you to do that? And what's the difference between what you know and what the chiropractor who knows that they should be giving up, the amount of alcohol, they know they should be exercising more and they know they should be resting more, yet they're not doing it. What is the difference between you and that person, do you think?
I don't know. Even this morning, I was talking at length to a young chiropractor guy just out of school, horrible amount of debt, struggling in clinical practice. And I keep thinking, you know, I think it's a combination of both stress and fear. I think that chiropractors a lot of times don't do what they should even do in the clinic because of fear, meaning the whole concept of trying to have a wellness practice versus an ache and pain practice, I think that chiropractors are increasingly fearful that they can't make it unless they do an ache and pain type of practice. Well, I think that it's hard to overcome that fear. I think that even for myself, it was hard to overcome. In the beginning, I used to think, well, you know, if I turn down, you know, a guy with a bad knee, because it's really not what I want to do, then I'm hurting my clinical practice. But now I would take that guy on, try to educate them as to a whole other facet of health. Some reject this and some accept it wholeheartedly, and I think that makes a difference. I think that the reason that my habits are better than maybe some of my colleagues is because I'm totally committed to everything that I say, and I'm totally into doing my goals. And I think that if you don't do your goals, it's almost impossible to really accomplish anything in life. So we go over Daniel Amen's Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, and his goal setting strategy, page 136, 137 of his book. He's a neurologist from UC Irvine. That's for Scott Holloman. And we do our goals. But the other thing that I think I'm quite lucky in is that my significant other, Michelle, is a chiropractor. And I noticed that Michelle has only been up here with, even though we've been together now for 12 years, Michelle has only been up here with me now for about a year and a half. Before that, she lived in practice in Phoenix, Arizona. And I noticed that it was a lot easier for me to cheat and to be less committed until she came up. And she tells me the same thing. I think it's because we are committed together. It makes the biggest difference. I think that if your significant other doesn't understand the message and help you to stay on the straight and narrow, I think it's a lot more difficult. I think having a partner who's into the same message makes it so much easier for me to make sure that I stay committed to the principles of health that chiropractic stands for, and that I don't cheat and that I don't fall off the wagon, even though I do cheat. It's the Christmas season. I'm going to cheat. I didn't cheat over Thanksgiving. Our Thanksgiving is in November. I didn't cheat. I was so proud of myself. Will I get through Christmas without cheating? Unlikely. I'll probably cheat between now and Michelle's birthday, which is January 6th. So it's a pretty tough couple weeks there. We'll probably, you know, have a glass of wine, might even eat some junk food, but then we'll go right back under the straight and narrow. And we can literally go months without even a single slip in our personal habits. And like I say, we are committed to chiropractic. We see our chiropractors regularly. I mean, and we don't see a chiropractor just like your buddy, hey, adjust me. We go to a real chiropractor. We sign in. We sit down. We wait to be called. We go back and we get checked. Just like we would tell our patients to do. So we take our chiropractic very seriously on top of all of our other health habits.
Inspiring, yeah. Dan, inspiring. I'm interested, Dan, you mentioned before that you just got off a call where it was a Q&A, clinical questions. I'm interested with all your travel, with all the programs that you put on, is there a one or maybe two common questions that you just get asked over and over and over again? And if so, what's the answer?
The honest answer is no. There is no single. When I look at the calls I do, because I do that call every month, and the variety of stuff that comes in is absolutely stunning. I mean, it is stunning, the stuff that I see coming in. They're mostly not battle veterans. They're young chiropractors that are just out. And I think that some of the stuff that is most interesting, if there's any central themes, there's no central question, but there might be some central themes. And I think I am increasingly observing that chiropractors are having some trouble with basic sciences. I mean, even today, I got a academic question by a clinical chiropractor on leg pain. And the chiropractor was a little bit foggy on the differentials between sclerogenic pain, sciatica, and radiculopathy. and how they would vary clinically, if there's any overlaps, and if there's any differences in the management of those things. Even though, again, I don't think that that's really any of that's chiropractic. I think chiropractic's about mechanical integrity, systemic health, and wellness. But we do treat conditions. People come into us with those problems, and as a rule, we are very successful at treating them. But we need to know, we have to be well grounded, I think, in basics in clinical sciences. And I think that there is a mismatch with the understanding of basic and clinical sciences with a lot of the chiropractors that, and I don't want to say they're representative of the entire profession, but of the group that calls in, I get a lot of basic science questions, you know, cervical genic headache, fibromyalgia, chronic back pain, just something as simple as chronic back pain. I mean, just talking to you guys without putting you on the spot, they have known for decades, literally decades, that the chronic back pain has a single cause, a single source. What is it? No, don't answer. But it's interesting that if you ask that question to chiropractors, how many do not know the answer? Or let's just do something even more simple and more my real strength. I do whiplash. Do you guys know the majority of whiplash patient chronic pain comes from a single tissue, a single source? What is that tissue? What is that source? You find that many chiropractors do not know. They're not real conversant with it. Yet it's been published in the literature nonstop since 1993. And so people that treat it should know this stuff. So these are basic science and clinical science questions. By the way, the answers, respectively, for the low back thing, it's the annulus of the disc. The disc is innervated. And it is chronic back pain is discogenic. It's not facet. It's not myofascial. It's not anything. It's not radiculopathy, not a pinched nerve. It is discogenic. The number one source of chronicity for whiplash is the facet joint capsules. It's the facet joints. That's what's injured. It's what exceeds the limit of anatomic integrity. So just kind of dealing with academic questions like that. So at the college, that's what I do. I am the clinical guy. I do basic and clinical sciences, and I integrate it, and it works really good. Even though my role at the college may be changing with the recent retirement of our best subluxation neurology guy, Dr. Malik Slosberg. Malik has thrown in the towel, and he has retired as of December this month. And so there's a chance, I don't know for sure, don't want to put any of the administrators of the college on notice or put them in a box, but that I might end up doing his class, which means I won't be doing clinical management anymore, which I'm good at. But I would always look forward to the opportunity to better describe what chiropractic really is to the 12th quarter seniors before they graduate. I would like them to be the best knowledgeable chiropractors in the world as to what chiropractic really is from a neuroanatomical and pathophysiological perspective and what the adjustment is really doing, why we're adjusting the patient, different than the management of headaches and back pains and leg pains and whiplash pain, which is different. It's do some different sort of stuff, which I sort of look forward to.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Yeah. Dan, I often, my brain gets a little bit confused, and I get, when I'm talking about proprioception and joint mechanics and relation to gravity as a model of subluxation and chiropractic, then I get, my head goes into a more tonal model of chiropractic is all about tone of the nervous system. Can you explain maybe the differences or the similarities of those models? Are they different?
I would think they are definitely linked. They are definitely linked. But let me answer the question by just doing it this way. What are we really doing when we adjust people? Are we unpinching a pinched nerve? With extreme rare exception, no way. To say that a chiropractic adjustment is the unpinching of a pinched nerve is stupid talk. It is not true. We are treating a completely different type of nerve interference. Now, using your terminology, this type of nerve interference is a nerve tone problem. It is well described in the literature. It was described more than a century ago. It is called denervation supersensitivity. The original champion of denervation supersensitivity is Walter B. Cannon out of Harvard's medical school. he describes it, but if you go back and read about Walter Buchanan's denervation supersensitivity, he is describing flawlessly chiropractic nerve interference using a tonal model. This is what we're really doing. Walter Buchanan died in 1945, so he's a long time goner. The guy that is the contemporary guy today is a principal at the multidisciplinary chronic pain clinic at the University of Washington in Seattle. His name is Chan Gunn. Gunn is good. He's written 4 books in a stack of journal articles. If you read this stuff, and Gunn is still alive, if you read this stuff, he is the contemporary champion on denervation supersensitivity. Both Gunn and Cannon go over the same thing, and this is it. There is a universal law of neurology, a law that has no exceptions in physiology. It's universal. And the universal law of neurology is subtly sick nerves fire more, not less. So they get increased tone. Subtly sick nerves fire more. You have more pain, more sympathetic tone. By the way, more sympathetic tone gives you immunosuppression. You don't want increased sympathetic tone. You do not want increased pain. You want to, and so why do you have these things? Well, very often, the reason you have these, the most basic concept in all of that is the pain concept. They've known since 1962, really since 62, but really since 1965, that there's a thing called the gait theory. And what the gait theory says is that the tone in the pain nerve is inhibited by non-nociceptive afferents. The non-nociceptive afferents that control nociceptive tone are the mechanoreceptors, the proprioceptors. Mm-hmm. And that when you lose mechanical integrity, you disinhibit and you get increased tone because the universal law of neurology is that the subtly sick nerves fire off more, not less. Well, if you read Kaur, the K-O-R guy, Irvin Kaur, the Princeton physiologist, he takes the exact same concepts and says that increased sympathetic tone is also controlled by the mechanos. In fact, if you read his article from the Journal of the American Osteopathic Association, December of 1979, I'm already in my second year as a chiropractor, he says in there that increased sympathetic tone is the common factor in visceral disease. But he is adamant one of the best and most clinically effective ways to inhibit increased sympathetic tone and its visceral consequences is to improve mechanical integrity and the way that we live, exist, and function in a graphic environment. And that when joints themselves, this is stuff I learned from Dr. Kerr, the segmental movers themselves are not under the control of the voluntary motor cortex. Rather, they're under the control of the cerebellovestibulospinal tracts. Those tracts are non-voluntary. Consequently, if you have a mechanical problem in the segmental movers, you cannot remedy that problem by giving people exercises. It's not that exercises are bad, but it is not a substitute for chiropractic. We would remedy those types of mechanical problem with chiropractic and then maybe try to stabilize it with follow-up appropriate exercises. But chiropractic and exercise are not overlaps. A lot of times cynical people say, well, I don't need a chiropractor, I just need to do exercise. Not true. Exercise doesn't unlock the segmental lesion. You need a chiropractor to do that or someone that has the ability to find it first off and then come up with a line of drive that would fix it, break up the adhesions, remodel the glues. And in so doing, that changes the tone not only in the proprioceptors. Proprioceptor tone's mechanoreceptor tone controls both sympathetic and nociceptive tone. When we adjust, we're helping both visceral problems and pain problems. For the first 50 years, chiropractic really emphasized the visceral component. But then after infectious diseases started to be, they use antibiotics on infections, they would prevent infections with vaccinations, chiropractic started seeing less and less of those types of patients, and they started to gravitate towards musculoskeletal ache and pain syndromes. And that goes on through today. If you go one block even from my office and just start knocking on doors, say, hey, what's a chiropractor good for? They go, oh, he's the go-to provider if you have neck pain or back pain. They're good for that. But really, chiropractor didn't even do that until about the last 50, 60 years. Before that, we did more visceral types of things, and we're good at it. In fact, we're very good at it. I just put on my article review service. I have this article review service. I just posted a killer article. Just came out 2015 out of the journal Medical Hypothesis on the relationships between mechanical function of the spine, spinal manipulation, and the neuroendocrine physiological systems. Killer article. The thing that I just could not be happier with the article. But I'm also distressed because the article is authored by physical therapists. Mm. What used to be the domain of chiropractic is increasingly becoming the domain of others. And yet you see chiropractors increasingly becoming musculoskeletal practitioners, which I'm not negative on. You help a lot of people. But I think to do that and to ignore the fact that we influence visceral physiology is a mistake. And we should not forget those components of our heritage. And in fact, I think we should exploit them and make a bigger deal out of them. I know that I do. And I know that a lot of chiropractors like me do because we're kind of into that. And the result is, you know, myself, my children, we just don't go to allopathic providers. We're healthy. We're living the message. We're living the signs.
Dan, if a chiropractor wants to have a bigger impact on their practice members, and move from a more pain-based practice into one that's kind of a wider scope from there, what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that they're making that really prevent them from having that kind of impact?
Well, I would answer by saying two things. First thing, I think that the biggest mistake that any chiropractor makes is failure to do patient education class. I think that patient education class needs to be mandatory. You don't do it, you're out of the practice. And I think that's when you start to grow. You have to do patient education class. Patient education class has to cover chiropractic as something more than just an ache and pain thing. It's got to go chiropractic for health and wellness. You got to go from pediatrics to geriatrics. You got to go from treatment of syndromes to the prevention of syndromes. A completely different health model. I think it has to be thrown out in patient education class. I just noticed that back in the Pleasanton years, I was so busy that I never actually did the consultation with a new patient. I never did the exam or took the x-rays. I didn't even do the report of findings. All of that was done by other people. And then I would see them once all of that was done, and they would kind of look at me like, you know, heck, who are you? You didn't do the exam. You didn't talk to me. Who are you? But then I would do patient education class. Once they went to patient education class, that's when I think, for the most part, I sealed the deal. At least for those that the deal was sealable, I sealed the deal at patient education class. It was that moment that people accepted me as, number one, their doctor, and two, they looked at chiropractic different than a musculoskeletal ache and pain thing. I think, therefore, again, that when I broke my answer into two things, the biggest mistake is failure to do patient education class. I think you really have to do that. Second thing is, I started almost all of my patients with aches and pains. I am the whiplash guy. Anybody knows me in Northern California, I'm the whiplash guy. That we got patients in because of whiplash. I know how to evaluate them. I know how to work up the case. I know what whiplash is. I am conversant in all of the things. I can testify. I can write the narrative. I can do everything. All the med legal components I can do. But what we would do is get these whiplash patients and we would try to turn them into lifelong wellness patients. I'm not negative on musculoskeletal ache and pain. We really help people, but we would try to get them into lifelong wellness patients, cash types of patients, away from the insurance thing. And I think that was our strategy. So mistake, don't do patient education class. Strategy. Second mistake, failure to try to parlay your musculoskeletal ache and pain patients into a more wellness type of practice. If you do that, even if you just looked at your own practice, if you converted just 10% of your musculoskeletal into lifelong wellness patients, it's not too long and you can't even fit in another new patient. Mm. All of your slots every day are already filled up with the people that are already coming in for wellness assessment. Plus, the grim reality is, statistically, every American gets in a motor vehicle collision once every decade. Which means if you got them just hanging around anyway for wellness, boom, going to get another wreck. You drop them right back into the PI thing. You treat them for that or for the next time they hurt their back or whatever, sprain their ankle, whatever. You treat them for that and then you just kind of, you know, put them right back into the wellness model once that crisis care phenomenon has run its course.
Mm. Yeah. Great.
Pretty simple stuff, really. Yeah, love it, Dan. Appreciate that. So you mentioned, you know, that you run a myriad of courses throughout the year.
I do.
Yeah. Where do people go to find out a bit more about what you're doing, where you're doing it, and how you're doing it?
Well, it's all contract work. So I don't really advertise it that much. It's all contract work. It's all the kind of thing that someone hires me to do. Like when I'm out to Australia, they're hiring me. They do their own marketing and everything. We do keep a running list on the webpage, danmurphydc.com, www.danmurphydc.com. There's a list of where I am and what the topic is and who the contact person is. For example, one of the things I just did way over the top. I just did a 200-page class on vaccinations and hormesis. I mean, it's maybe the most amazing thing I've ever done. I integrated like 20 different concepts into a two-hour run-on sentence. And when I looked at people at the end, they were just stunned. And they're lay people. They're lay people. I mean, just showing them, you know, just a completely different way to think about health and physiology. And I'm using Guyton. I'm using Gray's Anatomy. I'm using Kendall and Schwartz's Neuroscience Tech. I'm showing them brand new articles out of Scientific American on hormesis. And, you know, just kind of looking at this thing. So, you know, I do classes on just about everything. Takes me a while to work them up. And some of them are taped. People can get them. You can always, you know, talk to Michelle, and she has some of the things taped. You can always get some of the things. But the actual 12-hour classes, they're always on the webpage. People just can go to the webpage and see, even though we really have very little to do with it. We don't market it. We don't sign you up. We don't do any of that stuff. We're just chiropractors who have these classes that we do. And then whoever's sponsoring me pays me my honorarium and my expenses. And then, I go home and go right back to work.
So, Dan, you also mentioned a little bit before because you have an article service as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
For 16 years, I have been reviewing an article a week on something that I think has a direct bearing on chiropractic. So it can be on almost anything. It can be on the chiropractic neurology, like the one I just said on spinal adjusting, and the neuroendocrine system just came out of the journal Medical Hypothesis, which, by the way, a journal that was started by Arthur Guyton, the physiologist. I've done this now for 16 years. It's the biggest part of my week to figure out what to put up there. And I do just pretty much every article has something to do with innate intelligence. For example, do you guys know that if you regularly take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs for pain, if you were a regular consumer of pain drugs, you increase your personal risk of Alzheimer's by 66%. Did you know that? Most people don't.
No.
And yet this is the alternative to chiropractic. You go to a chiropractor to get rid of your pain and get improved mechanical integrity that closes the pain gate, or you take these drugs. When you take these drugs, it increases your risk of Alzheimer's by 66%, published in the journal Neurology, April of 2009. How many people know that? So I see these articles, they have a direct bearing on chiropractic. I review them. I do one a week. I've already done four for 2016, so I'm a little bit ahead of the game. I'll probably do another one today. I think I'm doing one on low-impact motor vehicle collisions. But people can get those. You just get it through my webpage, www.danmurphydc.com. And you can all get 16 years of archives even if you want them. They're up there. So,
yeah, brilliant. Beautiful. And we'll be sure, Dan, to have a link with that. Guys, if you look just down beneath us here or to the side, we'll have a link there to Dan's website where you can get a hold of that. Mm-hmm. And then also there's some brilliant free resources that you have. Some of the killer articles that you talk about. When I first heard you back in San Francisco a number of years ago, there's some great stuff there as well. So be sure to check out Dan's website. And, Tony and I are very excited to be bringing you down here to Australia next year. And
are you guys the guys that are bringing me down?
We're the ones doing it, Dan, absolutely.
I never know. You guys got the deal with Michelle. I never know, but I'm looking so forward to it. You know, I was there a few years ago and I had a great time, but we were in Canberra.
Yes.
Right. You know, which is kind of not the spot, I guess. I mean, it's like, I mean, it's not the spot for the tourists. I mean, you pretty much toured the place up about a half a day. And then, so where are we going? Are we in Melbourne or Sydney?
Yeah, we're in Melbourne. So
I'm looking forward to doing it. That'd be great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Absolutely. So, Dan, on behalf of Tony, myself, and the World Chiropractic Summit, we'd like to firstly really acknowledge you and thank you for the tremendous enthusiasm that you continue to have the way that you've impacted so many of the speakers that we've had on the World Chiropractic Summit, of which I'm happy to raise my hand and say that you've been one of my mentors. I was there when you spoke in Canberra those years ago, and you just, I didn't know you at the time, and you just knocked my socks off as well. So thank you for all that you have done and all that you continue to do. Guys, if Dan is anywhere local in your neighbourhood, then get to see him, and if he's not, then travel to see him. His website has the free resources are brilliant. There's Dan's article source there as well. But Dan, on behalf of Tony and myself, a huge thank you. Thanks for taking the time to share with us today too. And we look forward to having you down here in Australia in 2016.
Thanks, guys. Glad to talk to you.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, bye.